My name is Kishore Chandiramani, and I welcome you all to this second in a series of 6 sessions on stress management. In this second session, I'll be discussing a model of the mind that can help us understand the common psychological symptoms and how they are produced. The mind can be understood in terms of 2 broad compartments, the conscious and the unconscious. The conscious mind is just the tip of an iceberg, and the rest is the unconscious. According to a rough estimate, only about 10 to 20% of our mind is conscious, and the rest is unconscious. The psychological implication of this is that when we experience extreme emotions, we have to say to ourselves that we are talking about only the 10 or 20% of the mind that is conscious, and the rest is unknown to us. The remaining 80 to 90% contains joys and sorrows that may be many times greater than the joys and sorrows we experience in our day-to-day life. Without going into the details of the different ways of understanding the unconscious mind, I'd like to say that the unconscious mind is not easily accessible to us, but it's constantly affecting our behavior and needs to be worked on. The unconscious mind is the storehouse of all our past experiences. We collect thousands of experiences on a daily basis, and many of them are stressful in nature. If we are good at managing this stress on a daily basis, a lot of them get worked on and don't leave any residues, even though they are recorded in the unconscious mind. However, if a stressful or emotionally charged experience doesn't get worked on, it goes into the unconscious mind with all its emotional charge and stress in the seed form. These experiences undergo further transformation in the unconscious mind, depending upon what environment they get there. They might gain strength if they get connected with similar other experiences already existing there. Very much like a novice going into a university and coming out a scholar, or a petty thief going into prison and coming out a hardened criminal. This process explains how delusions are formed. For individuals who have had issues with trust from their childhood, any normal suspicious behavior turns into a paranoid thought because of the mistrust already existing in the unconscious mind. The individual is not able to dismiss the thoughts or disidentify with them because of the strength of the experience. A second scenario would be that the emotions that go into the unconscious mind lose strength and eventually fade away. And this explains how traumatic experiences from the past undergo a process of natural healing with the passage of time. It is also possible that certain experiences get detached from the original context. That is, the emotion separates from the thought, and it can get attached to any other thought or a situation. This process is called displacement. We see this happening in phobias and obsessive compulsive disorder, where a fear or a worry about some real life situation, now or in the past, gets transferred onto harmless objects and situations. These could be harmless animals, open spaces, closed spaces, traveling, heights, certain people, etc. For some people, a preoccupation with cleaning and washing offers a distraction from their worries about real life situation that they find insolvable. This process of displacement serves its purpose because in certain conditions, the original situation is so painful that the person doesn't want to work on them. And by transferring the emotions onto a situation that is acceptable to the person, the emotion gets worked on. Secondly, in certain situations, due to the shameful nature of these experiences, the person themselves don't want to admit the nature of the fear, and that closes off the possibility of it ever getting worked on. The stress or worry appearing in a disguised form offers an opportunity to the individual to work on it. It's important to understand that the experiences from the unconscious mind are constantly influencing our behavior. It is the unconscious mind which, although tiny, remains in good control of the unconscious mind. There are moments when the conscious mind gets overwhelmed by the unconscious mind for short periods of time. And this is when panic attacks, psychotic symptoms, and occasional suicidal thoughts that the person doesn't want to carry out at other times emerge. We can understand this model of the mind in terms of a horse and the rider. The horse can be described as the unconscious mind and the rider as the conscious mind. Under normal circumstances, the rider has full control over the horse. But at certain times, we find that the horse takes over. And that's when psychiatric symptoms occur. Even hallucinatory experiences and delusional ideas are about the unconscious experiences coming out into the conscious mind, wherein the individual starts identifying with that experience. Normally, there is a thick barrier between the conscious and the unconscious mind. But in psychotic individuals, this is weakened, resulting in seepage of the unconscious into the conscious mind. This can also occur when the defenses of the conscious mind are weakened due to alcohol and drug intoxication. The next question is how the stress is undone in the unconscious mind. We can see it as a natural ability. Nature has given us the ability to undo stress. So it's good news because we don't have to learn stress management the way we learn a foreign language. A foreign language has to be learned from scratch, whereas management of stress is given to us naturally. It's very much like healing of a physical injury. The body knows how to heal itself, and all we do is to protect the injured part from germs, contamination, and further injury. The body knows how to heal itself. But this healing will not take place if you are constantly scratching the wound and interfering with the natural healing process. The same principle applies to the mind as well. Any psychological injury or trauma is subject to the same healing process. However, this healing process can get complicated if you constantly interfere with it. We need to understand what causes interference in this natural healing process of stress. If you are constantly forming new stressful experiences and making judgments on a constant basis, it delays the healing process. It's important to understand that it's the judgments that produce emotional reactions. Judgments in terms of good, bad, right, wrong, beautiful, ugly, intelligent, stupid, nice, nasty, about ourselves and about others that produce emotional reactions and stress. It's therefore easy to understand that most situations that we encounter create new emotions and new stress for us. Going out is stressful. If we have nowhere to go, it can also be stressful as the mind reacts to being on our own. Having friends can be stressful. Not having friends can also be stressful. Shopping, traveling, cooking, domestic chores, talking to people can all create stress. I use the analogy of our clothes getting dirty. We get up in the morning and put on clean clothes. By the end of the day, they have become dirty because they have come in contact with the external environment and the body. In a similar way, when you get up in the morning, maybe the mind is fresh, and as the day goes by, it picks up stress from the environment, and at the end of the day, it becomes unclean. We put our clothes in the washing machine, and the cycle takes an hour and a half to clean the clothes. But what about the mind? Where is the washing machine for the mind? It's therefore important that we set aside some time, about half an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening, when we suspend our normal routine activities and allow the mind to work on the inner stress. The other example that can be used here to explain this point is that of servicing a car. The car can't be serviced while it's running. It has to come to a standstill to be serviced. In a similar fashion, if the mind is constantly engaged with the outside world, creating new experiences and new stresses, it has no time to work on the existing stress which is in the system. It's therefore important that for short periods of time, we suspend our routine activities and call it me time, where we slow down the pace of life and have no mental checklist of things to do. If anyone wants to know what exactly to do in that half an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening, details are posted on the website www.undoyourstress.com under the heading A Holistic Way to Relax. Now, one might ask, by what mechanisms the stress is undone? It is the healthy part of the mind that deals with the stressful part of the mind. To give another example, if my hand gets dirty, I use the other hand to clean it. And if my foot gets dirty, I use the other foot to clean it. In a similar fashion, if a part of my mind is unclean or stressed, it's the other part of the mind, the healthier one, that cleans it. So we need at least a part of the mind that is free from emotions to deal with the emotional or stressful part of the mind. But that part of the mind should be emotionally neutral or stress-free. Otherwise, this work can't be done. I equate the healthy part of the mind with clean water that is needed to clean the dirty clothes. Colored water or dirty water can't be used to wash the clothes. There are two different parts of the mind. The one that experiences an emotion can be described as the experiencing self. And the other part of the mind that is free from stress can be described as the observing self. Most therapies focus on changing the experiencing self, that is, our thoughts and emotions. Whereas this program is aimed at changing the observing self, that is, changing the way we understand and emotionally respond to our own thoughts and emotions, which eventually changes our experiencing self. We'll come back to this later on when we discuss the functioning of the mind in greater depth. Now, I'd like to discuss this natural ability to undo stress in a bit more detail. It operates through a homeostatic mechanism that operates in the body, or if you were to equate it in mechanical terms, it works very much like a thermostat. When the room temperature goes up, the thermostat switches the heating system off. And when the room temperature comes down, the thermostat switches the heating system on. The same principle applies to a number of different bodily functions. There are a number of different receptors in the body that provide information to the brain about the state of affairs in body. And the brain then controls the functions through the feedback system. When the blood pressure shoots up, there are pressure sensors in the arteries that give signal to the brain, and certain chemicals are released to bring the blood pressure down. And if the blood pressure goes low, these pressure sensors send signal to the brain for release of different set of chemicals to increase the blood pressure. When there is pain in the body, the receptors pick up the sensation and certain chemicals such as endorphins are released from the brain to undo the pain. Similarly, when blood sugar goes up, certain chemical receptors send signal to the appropriate organs to release insulin. And when blood sugar goes down, the insulin release stops. These principles apply even for regulation of eating and body temperature. A similar principle applies to the mind as well. When stress builds up, the brain picks up the signals and certain mechanisms are activated to undo the stress. But for that to happen, we need to stay connected with the experience of stress for a reasonable period of time. But if we cut ourselves off from the stress by distracting ourselves into some other activity, the brain doesn't perceive the signal and no remedial action takes place. So one can say that distracting ourselves into something else that doesn't remind us of the stress is generally unhelpful. Except for certain situations where the stress is intolerable and a continued exposure to the stress can cause further damage to our psyche. But apart from those situations, one has to stay connected with the inner stress in order for it to get worked on. I would now like to talk about equanimity, which is also described as neutrality of the mind. It means the mind is on an even keel, neither too excited nor too depressed. And from a stress management perspective, the mind is most efficient when it is in the neutral zone. When we feel happy about something, or if the mind is constantly creating positive experiences, it is not free to work on the negative experiences. It's therefore logical to say that if one wants to work on the negative emotions, one has to let go of one's preoccupation and engagement with positive emotions for short periods of time. That doesn't mean that one should not pursue positive experiences, but trying to pursue them all the time can be a trap and counterproductive when it comes to stress management. Even positive experiences such as attending a party, inviting people over, going on a date, working on a new project can all create stress. I'm not saying that those experiences should not be sought, but one has to understand that the deep-rooted inner negative experiences can't be worked on when we are engaged in creating new positive experiences. Now, looking at the definition of psychological stress. Psychological stress can be understood in terms of a gap between the demands placed on us and our ability to cope with them. If the demands are high, but the coping ability is also high, there will be no stress. Contrary to that, if the demands are normal or average, but the coping ability is low, there will be stress. This leads us to three different ways of understanding stress. It can be understood in terms of an external situation that puts demands on us, which we are not able to meet. So this definition of stress is external, that it's an external stimulus or a situation that causes stress in us. The second approach is understanding stress in terms of a response. The demands placed on us may not be excessive, but our ability to cope with these demands is very limited, and that causes stress. You might be familiar with situations where individuals get stressed in situations that are not stress-producing in the real sense, but the person does feel stressed. This stress is due to reasons within the individual. And the third way of understanding stress is to see it in terms of the interaction between a given situation and the individual. For the purposes of stress management, I'd like to adopt the definition of stress that is based on individual's response. It's a mental reaction that causes stress. If you try to analyze the situation deeply, you'll find that it is not the external situation that causes stress, but how we perceive it. If we don't perceive a stressful situation as stressful, there will be no stress. And if we analyze a neutral situation as stressful, we will get stressed. So the origin of the stress is not in the external situation, but in how we perceive it, what judgments we make, and based on those judgments, what emotional reactions are produced within us. That is stress. Now, from this perspective, we can deal with stress at two different levels. The first one at the origins, that is, how we perceive different situations and what judgments we make. And the second level is trying to undo the emotional and physiological reaction that happens in response to the stress. That is, heart starts pounding, we hyperventilate, the skin gets cold and clammy, muscles tighten up, and so on. To put it simply, I'd like to say that we can deal with stress at the mental level and at the physical level. And we can combine different strategies and work at both the levels rather than working at one or the other. The biofeedback treatment and relaxation exercises work at the physical level to undo the effects of stress. Whereas cognitive therapies, mindfulness meditation, existential psychotherapy, and psychoeducation deal with the stress at the mental level. Now, I'd like to spend a few minutes on the physiology of stress. There are two types of physiological reactions. One that's under our control, and the other that is outside our control. The nervous system that is outside our control is called autonomic nervous system. And this has two further components to it: the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. Because of these opposing influences on our nervous physiology, we have a very dynamic system which can respond to emergencies and at the same time meet the demands during rest periods. In order to meet with an emergency, that is fear, fight, and flight, we need more oxygen to the brain and more oxygen to the muscles. And for that to happen, the heart has to pump faster and more blood will be utilized. And in turn, the blood needs to be purified. And this is achieved through hyperventilation, so that more oxygen goes into the system to purify the blood. In case of an emergency, the physiological functions that are not required in emergency, such as digestion, sexual function, and blood supply to the skin, take a back seat. This explains why in anxiety we have tummy upset, sexual problems, and cold and clammy skin. So, in case of an emergency, the sympathetic system is hyperactive, resulting in increased heart rate, increased respiration, and mental alertness. The blood supply to the skin is shut off, resulting in cold and clammy skin. Whereas, when the parasympathetic nervous system is active, and that happens during rest periods, more blood goes to the skin, so you feel very warm and comfortable. The digestive system is more active, so that repair and healing of the tissues can take place. The mind is not required to be alert, So less blood goes to the brain and more to the digestive system. Now all this can be explained in terms of the functioning of a car, where the accelerator is the sympathetic nervous system and the brakes are the parasympathetic nervous system. And we normally have a balance between the two. In the case of a perceived emergency, a signal comes from the brain and it stimulates the sympathetic nervous system. In case of anxiety, irritable bowel syndrome, hypertension, and migraine, the sympathetic nervous system is overactive. Whereas with individuals suffering from bronchial asthma, syncope, and chronic fatigue syndrome, the parasympathetic nervous system is overactive. With anxiety disorder, the system prepares itself for an emergency when there is no actual emergency. It's like pressing the accelerator when the car is stationary. It leads to engine revving up. This is exactly what happens with anxiety disorder patients, where innocuous situations are being interpreted as threatening and catastrophic, leading to sympathetic overactivity. Security alarms are set off when there is no real emergency. There is some research to suggest that there is an imbalance between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system in depressive disorders as well. So, in today's session, we have discussed a model of the mind that can explain how stress is produced through our judgments and how it manifests at the physical level through an imbalance between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. In the next session, we'll talk about how to fine-tune our judgments and how to free ourselves from the restricting influences of our past emotions. Thank you very much.